Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Behind Massive Screens, game development podcast here from Massive Entertainment. And today, I'm actually super excited about this. I always say I'm super excited about the guest. Today, I'm super excited for many reasons, but welcome, Su Kang, cinematic animator.
Cinematic animator.
I always get that wrong. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thank you. How are you?
I'm good.
Yeah. Thank you so much for inviting me here.
Of course, that's one of the reasons why I'm excited. One, I'm excited about the subject, which is going to be great.
Yeah.
But also, I looked back into our emails earlier today. And we might be dating the episode here. But thanks to the global thing that happened, the first email we have about asking you to be on what was then the Fika Sessions was in September 2020.
No way.
Yeah.
No way.
This episode
that much has passed.
Yeah. One and a half years
really?
In the making. It's, and it feels like it was like 6 months ago we had the first meeting.
Yeah. So. Yeah. No, we kept delaying it.
Yep.
Things kept happening. Yeah.
Yeah. That's absolutely insane.
I'm glad we're here. Finally.
Finally. No, I'm super happy. So let's start out with the big question we always ask.
Yes.
In short, you can take as much time as you want. But what does a cinematic animator do?
Yeah. In short, we cinematic animators, we are responsible for making the visual storytelling of the game exciting, inspirational, fun, engaging, making sure that what you're seeing on screen, the storytelling, helps you progress with your gameplay as well.
Right.
Yeah. But just in general, just fun to watch while you're sitting and you're taking a little break from gameplay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we want you to have fun and be really involved in what's going on story-wise of the game that you're playing.
Yep.
Yeah. So that's the general idea of a cinematic animator.
Yep. Yeah. There's a lot going into this. Yeah. So
a lot already.
Yeah.
Yes.
But first of all, before we start, again, a classic question, usually super interesting, is how did you end up at Massive and in the games industry in general?
Yeah, in general. So I come from cinematic film animation background. I studied that in an art school. But I know in my heart that I've always been into games. I come from a family of gamers.
Yeah.
I remember my dad told me when they were young, like young newlyweds, he would wake up at 3 a.m. because he couldn't find my mom next to him on bed. So, he will come out and they will be like, it will be in a dark room just with the screen, like blue screen, and my mom still playing that Nintendo NES game at 3 a.m., like trying to beat the level,
right.
So that's and I know growing up, we just grew up playing games.
Yeah.
Me, my siblings, my mom still plays games at age 55. So I have a big passion for games.
Right.
Yeah. So I graduated college and I said I'm just gonna go for games.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I landed my first gig as a contract cinematic animator because I think back then, cinematic animation was still more efficient to have as a contract job for like 6 to 8 months. And I had, I've been very lucky, but I had really good projects to work on, which is Uncharted 4 and Horizon Zero Dawn.
Two games you might have heard about.
And I had so much fun. But as I mentioned, as a contract job for 6 to 8 months, I felt like I wanted to know more beyond just animating, like what does it take to make a really nice AAA game like these.
Yep.
So I was looking for more full-time And then I found Massive.
Right.
And I found out that they were working on a really cool project. So I was like, I think I need to work for this. I applied and luckily I'm here. Yes, working.
Here we are.
Yeah, here we are. Yeah.
So how was school? You said you work. You studied film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Primarily.
Yeah.
What was it like going from? Or first of all, what was school like?
Yeah, we in that in school for film animation, I actually learned everything of the pipeline. Like I learned to storyboard, to the concept art, and then from there all the way to 3D like modeling.
Right.
Animation, lighting, compositing, all that, all the way to rendering. So I got to learn everything about a little bit of every pipeline.
Yep.
And then we ended up with like for graduating, you need to make a short film. And I made a 4-minute short film where we did everything from scratch ourselves.
Right.
Yeah. So that was, I mean, it was fun, but also rough.
Yeah.
I sometimes wanted to just focus on one thing, but juggling all that meant like I couldn't do detailed, polished version of any of that.
Right.
So yeah. So studying, it was nice. Yeah. That's why I know a little bit of everything. But after I graduated, I was like, I wanted to do animation since the beginning, like since I was little. So I'm just going to focus on animation.
Right.
And like, I felt like after graduating, I could go really in detail learning of the animation by being in the industry as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But did you like straight away know that you were going to take this to a gaming context, or you were like, okay, I'm going to work in film? Did you have a plan from the beginning, or it just kind of went that way?
I think it happened half. It just happened that I got my job in gaming industry first, but it wasn't too far off from what I learned about film animation,
right?
Because it was cinematic animation, not as opposed to gameplay animation, for example.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So it was, they were not too far off from what I learned at school and what I did in the game company.
Right. So yeah, because that's kind of the next question is
how
the difference was between studying or working on film animation to gaming animation. But it wasn't that big of a leap, or?
Not too big. Yeah, not too big, because in the end, I'm applying the same learnings of the cinematic scene in a film.
Right.
In just like in a game.
Yeah,
maybe the transition might be different. Maybe you can cheat more in the film.
Yeah.
But maybe. But it didn't feel like I was starting from, or like reset from zero.
Right.
It didn't feel that way. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just thinking about like all the game animation schools out there now. Mm-hmm. But if you want to go the cinematic animation route, then this is also an option, or maybe even better, because you get the whole storytelling, like cinematic.
Yeah. And experience. Also depends what your preference is. The film animation is a bit more cartoony.
Yeah.
Exaggerated movements, you know, it's funky. But if you're not too much into that and you feel like, oh, my style is more, a bit slightly more towards realistic, then I would say game cinematic animation would be closer to what you want.
Okay, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. I also, just as a side note, this is not really related, but I love the story of having a family that were all gamers.
Yes.
I think we see kind of two different, now having done so many interviews, you usually tend to see two big ones. Is that's the one, like, oh, my parents were gamers and my whole family is gaming.
Yeah.
And then two, I didn't know that gaming was an option.
Right.
I've seen that a couple of times. I didn't even know it was a career, and then I ended up here. But I'm just wondering what it's going to be like in the future generations. Everybody's going to say, well, my parents were gamers. Like, everybody's gaming now. Just a side note.
Completely agree with that. Yeah.
But moving over kind of more towards the actual job. Now we have kind of the high theory of what it is you do. Let's actually dig into how this works. Mm-hmm. So we have, there's so much, I don't know where to start. Let's just start with an ordinary cutscene in game.
Yeah.
So the player is walking somewhere, something is triggered, and then something happens. Mm-hmm. Like, how do you start building? What's the let's go from A to Z.
How to create a custom.
Where do you start?
The way we start, I guess, first of all, the story must be ready.
Yep.
Like, what's the event that's happening if you're getting to the place that you just said? So we reviewed the script. And does it make sense? Can we execute this in this level? Can we execute this as an animation? Does it make sense?
Right.
And when that is done, like, okay, yeah, you know what? We can shoot this. This is good. Then we prepare for motion shooting.
Right.
Yeah. So
let's just jump back real quick. Like, yeah, the script comes from?
From narrative designers.
Right.
Writers. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. They have made beautiful script. And yep. we read through that. You know, they also write the whole quest design as well. So you might want to be familiar with what the whole mission is about, so that you have a better idea of how, like, from gameplay to cutscene, how it transitions.
Right.
So it's a good idea to be familiar with the whole quest writing. Yeah. And then if there is dialogue, then you read the dialogue, you know, like, what kind of emotion is in this scene?
Yeah.
Yeah, be familiar with all that. So that's what the revision is. And then, yeah, we essentially, from there, we take it to motion capture preparation.
Right.
Yeah.
And what is motion capture preparation in this?
Yeah.
Now we're really getting into the technical kind of sides of things as well.
So because certain events happen in certain environments,
landmarks
or levels, for the actors to accurately move in relation to the environment that we're shooting this event or cutscene, we find the level in the engine and we export that as a 3D mesh that we can import into Motion Builder, because our motion capture is usually being handled in Motion Builder. That's the software that we're using. Yeah. So we go into the environment like, hey, this roughly is most of the area that we're covering for this cutscene. And the actors will be moving from here to there. You know, we define the range within the level. So we export that into 3D mesh, which is pretty easy. It's just two clicks. Yeah. And then we take it to Motion Builder, prepare the scene. And whoever is in charge of the motion capture gets to see the whole environment in 3D while the actors are moving live.
This is real time.
Real time, yeah. Sometimes with the character mesh already as well.
Oh, that's
cool. Yeah, so that we have a good idea of the proportion of the character in the environment.
Right.
Yeah, how much you can jump, how much you can walk, and you end up into the spot that you're supposed to be stopping.
Right.
Yeah, it's fun to look at, and it's very helpful for us as animators later on.
Yeah.
So we spend more time on polishing rather than motion editing.
Right.
So, because that is all sorted out.
Yeah, because you see a lot of like motion capture things. You see how they interact with like prepared. Do you have like prepared objects? Like,
yes. Yeah.
Okay. So this is actually a thing. I just think that you see people fall on things.
Right.
You see people pick things up.
Mm-hmm.
All of that.
Yeah. We need to have a very... It might not be 100% accurate, but closer, I guess, relationship in between the things in the environment, you know, rocks, like some hints of, you know, if there's a cliff, that's a good hint of where the character should stop.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, it's very important to have that level, like that 3D mesh in live motion capture.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it sounds like a lot of preparations, just being
it
able to go
lot.
in an effective way.
Yeah.
Go in and say, okay, here's the cliff you're supposed to stop at. Here's how we're going to move.
Yeah. Yeah.
It sounds like a lot of preparation.
Yeah. Take 4 steps only, because that's where like you're supposed to stop. Yeah.
Right.
But then it's hard to make it into 4 steps, maybe.
Yeah.
So lots of takes.
Yeah. Oh, I can imagine.
While shooting mocap, yeah.
Yeah. So how? Because that you talked about Motion Builder, and that's actually the next step. How do you go from there? You have the mocap. You have it in.
Yeah.
What's next?
Yeah. So we gave them the environment 3D mesh in Motion Builder, and they shoot the motion capture in Motion Builder. So naturally, we get the file of the motion capture in Motion Builder as well.
Yep.
So pretty easy. We we get the data and then we bring it into Motion Builder. And from there, we do the motion editing, which is if, like, I just mentioned, maybe the character moved too far or didn't move enough, then we are in charge of editing that. Time editing as well. Like, maybe we're supposed to make the scene shorter or make the character move faster. Or make the character, for example, in the motion capture, the character's moving or walking straight line, but maybe the direction changed so that the character's moving like around.
Right.
Yeah. So we can do that through motion editing in Motion Builder.
Yeah.
Yeah. So because it could have been that between motion capture and the time we get the file, things have changed a little bit.
Yeah.
The environment might have changed a bit. So it's not the end of the world. We can edit that in Motion Builder later on.
Yeah, because that's one thing you notice that about video games in general, and I guess most kind of creative outputs, is the iterative process.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, okay, the scene has completely changed or stuff like that, how you then go in. But how difficult is that then to make things kind of, you still need to move naturally?
Yeah, the Motion Builder, I mean, it's been in the industry for years. It's good at that. It's easy.
Yeah.
It's easy to manipulate that. It's easy to blend when you cut tracks in animation tracks. It's easy to blend so that it transitions naturally.
Right.
It moves naturally. So that's what Motion Builder is great at, motion editing.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So how do you plan for in all of this? What strikes me is you have the motion capture, you have the scene in 3D, you can do all these things. How do you plan for drama in this? Looking at scenes in video games, you see the camera, you see it moving, you have the mocap. Like, how do you think about the framing, how the camera moves in relation? Because I'm guessing I've been thinking way too much about this stuff, but if you have a scene, a character is moving, you have to have a 360 degree camera.
We do.
Camera,
that's what we get from Motion Builder.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's... To do that, the framing, like how it looks in the camera, that's when we take it to Maya.
Right.
Because that's what Maya is good for
now.
Here
we go. This is next on the list.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so all that, the framing, the staging, and all that, it's done in Maya.
Okay.
As well as polishing. But so once we are done with the motion editing, meaning timing, motion direction changes, we take it to Maya. And then there we work with the camera.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Which is a bit more involves more keyframing, which is me manual putting keys into the camera so I can move it freely the way I want it.
Right. What the keyframe is one of those words you hear a lot. What is a keyframe?
It's like, let me see if I can explain it better.
This is why you go
easier.
To school for 3 years.
Yeah, so that I don't use like dictionary word. But motion capture data is the data that we get, the frame by frame data that we get from the actors moving. But keyframing, you don't have any of that. You start from scratch. You only have the character to move yourself. You're the one moving the arm, set the key, and the next pose, move the arm this way, and then you set the key. That's keyframing.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. That sounds like, and then it moves, like blends the animations in between, or?
No, you manipulate that.
You manipulate
that. You key that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay. All right. Then I'm with you.
Yeah.
Because for me, keyframes is like keyframes in Flash 20 years ago.
Yeah,
when it automatically, put a keyframe here, and then it moves automatically. So that's what pops up into my head.
Yeah, that is keyframe as well. Yeah.
Wow, I'm not that outdated yet.
No,
soon, but not yet. So tell us a little bit about Maya, because again, that's an industry standard program that you
for animation.
Hear about.
Yeah. Autodesk Maya. I think still to me, Maya is the best software for high quality animation.
Yeah,
for polishing. Maya also has the features that Motion Builder has.
Right.
Yeah. It's just happened that Motion Builder is more focused in motion editing, so it's more efficient, faster. But Maya is still the best at animation.
Right.
If I want to, so like I mentioned, we're doing the camera work. It's better to do in Maya, so I get to really make the camera the way I want it. I have more freedom because
right.
I am the one setting the keys, moving the camera the way I want. Yeah. And especially when, and once that all of that is done, we need to do more polish work, like really micro polish on the brows, eye blinking, mouth corners, fingers. Yeah. All that is done in Maya so that we can take our cuts into the next level, to the polished level. Yeah.
How do you work with that? Like just that sounds like the kind of the micro stuff. How do you work and plan for that? How does that workflow look?
So all those micro polishing comes at the very end everything has been approved.
Yeah.
So the story is fine. The camera framing, staging, composition, all that's approved. The basic, I guess, motion happening inside the camera is also good. Then we're safe to say I can work 10 days on polishing all these details.
Yeah.
So I guess by that point, I know what kind of scene it is. Like it's an emotional one, it's a dramatic one. So I can focus on, I usually go, my first stage of polish will be on the finger and adding some more like realistic movement to the, let's say if I'm raising my arms and the shoulders are not going up, I do that. I move the shoulders up so that all that movement seems believable.
Yep.
Yeah, and more, I guess, accurate mechanically how the humans would do it. Yeah. And also to reinforce the feeling of like, oh, I'm excited when you're raising your arms. Yeah. And once I'm done with the body, I move to the face because that's my favorite part. I love facial polishing. Yeah.
Right.
And that's where I really push the emotion that the character is showing in the scene.
Yeah.
And that involves me moving forehead, wrinkles, eyebrows, you know, the eye twitching of the eye, like bottom eyelids. All that takes a long time, but it's so much fun and worth it in the final result.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or at least I feel like all that is helping.
Yeah. that sounds super, like, because you mentioned in the beginning that you had the emotion of the scene, but going to that level sounds, it sounds a lot of fun, but it also sounds extremely difficult to learn.
I cannot say I'm a master of it yet, but I try my best to really analyze people's actors, for example, in the film, what like facial features are moving when they're saying something. Yeah, I really like analyzing that a lot, and I use that when I'm working.
Right. we're actually going to come back to that later.
The
watching him things.
Yeah.
And then from there, you have this polished, you have the cameras, you have the emotions, you have the micro stuff.
Yeah.
Then you need to get it into the game.
Yes. If the animation department says, this is good, let's take it into game.
Ship and it.
Yeah. That's when we take it to the next hurdle, which is into the engine.
Right.
And which I have, I guess, less control over whether it's going to work or not. Yeah. So we export the data of the animation that we can import into the game. Will be sequence editor. That's what we use the most. It's equivalent of the sequencer of other engines. So that's where we put our animations in, hook it into the character that it belongs to.
Right.
Let's say I'm exporting animation tracks, and I assign that animation track to the character that it belongs to. And all that, it's good, it's working. And then it's the time when you need to trigger that cutscene and it doesn't work sometimes. And that's out of my control, I guess.
Yeah.
And that's when I have to poke different people like, hey, I think I did my job. Like, I did everything right.
Right.
But it's not working. And that's when I have to go people to people and ask like, hey, do you think maybe we need this and that to get it work? And usually, yes, we work together and make the cutscene trigger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it seems like this balance between the animation and the creative work and then the actual technical side.
Yeah,
it's a very technical product.
The the implementation in the engine is when I work with other disciplines the most.
Yeah, because that's also one of the things we tend to talk about is, because the fact that the game is a puzzle. You have all these different teams doing all these different things. Right? Yeah. You have gameplay, we have gameplay animation, we have sound, et cetera, et cetera. Like everything needs to come together.
Everything, yeah.
How does that communication work between you, gameplay, animation, sound, et cetera? Yeah. What is that like? And tech, of course.
Yeah.
Like programming and all of that.
For example, let's say there's a scene where you dive into the water and we need to see what's the water line.
Yeah.
In the level, are we going to have VFX to show, you know, the bubbles when you dive into the water? Because it's right on my camera. Like, and if the audio is matching, has the script been changed during that process? Is it still like, is the story still happening this way?
Yeah.
So that's, I need to assess all that, and depending on what I need, that's when I go to the person in charge of that discipline.
Yep.
And we talk about it like, hey, I've done my animation and now it's in game, but I need this and that.
Yep.
What do you think how can we work with this? Like, what's the timeline? What's the budget for this?
Yeah.
And if it turns out the budget is not enough, then sometimes it comes back to me. I change the animation so we don't have to deal with VFX.
Right.
Yeah. It's a cycle of iterations, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's an iterative process. This you made. Let's change it.
Yeah.
Oh, you changed it. Great. Yeah. We're changing it again.
Yeah. What's cheaper, for you to change it or for me to change it? Let's discuss that.
Those discussions.
Yeah.
I want to sit in on one of those meetings. But then if I'm listening to this and I'm thinking, wow, this is something that I'd love to do.
Mm-hmm.
Like, where can I go from here? From here now?
From here now. Okay. So if you are a passionate animator, I would say these days there are a lot of online courses that you can solely focus on animating.
Right.
Yeah, and I will highly recommend that if you know that you're gonna dedicate your life into animating. Yeah, so there's a lot of courses out there. Very common ones. If you type animation online courses in Google, there's many, 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 and they're all good.
Yeah.
They assign a mentor to you, and they assign a task, and you do your task, and they check up on you every like 2 weeks or something like that.
Right.
Yeah, and you get to learn. Like from A to Z about animation. Yeah. From there, you can decide if you want to take your path to film industry, cartoon film, or VFX animation. VFX animation as in live action films.
Right.
Yeah. Or you want to go to game, and it's fine. You can start, like you can go to any path, because in the end, I will say, every time you move to a company or industry, you're starting from the beginning anyway.
Yeah.
But if you know the foundations or the basics of animation, then that's all like it takes for you to start this journey of animator.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you let's recommend school as well, I guess.
Yeah.
To actually go to school.
Yeah.
Like
you
did.
I did because I didn't know much back then. Also, right. When I was going to college, I know it was only 2011, but at the time, the animation job was not very out there for people to research, I guess.
Right.
Yeah. But me, I know I went, but looking back, I feel like if I knew that I was just going to do animation, I could have not gone to school and just done this online courses and make a great portfolio, because that's in the end what they're gonna look at, a good solid animation portfolio.
Yeah
And if you can build one from online courses, you can go to school if you want as well. If you want to know like beyond animation and you want to have the college life, go for it, absolutely. But I don't think you absolutely need to go to art school
right
and learn animation from school, like in a art school to to become an animator.
That's one of those things, I guess. It's so easy to forget sometimes how much resources there are out there.
Yeah.
It's like, of course you go to school and learn these things.
Yeah. It has pros and cons. Of course, me going to school got me to connections when I graduated, because there are a lot of recruiters coming into school, and that helped me a lot as well. But life is not one way. If you're really out there, I think the first big step is to make a great portfolio.
Yeah.
Yeah. And from there, you can start being really active at where you want to go and searching companies and reaching out.
Yeah.
Yeah. But if you ask me, do you need to go to art school or college for animation? I'm going to say no.
Sense.
Not necessarily. Yeah.
No, that's a great tip.
Yeah.
Save yourself student loans.
Yeah.
All right. Any other resources I can turn to?
Yeah. So I think I mentioned this to you, but every animator that I know owns the Illusion of Life book. Two books. Illusion of Life and Animator's Survival Kit. Every animator has these books in their bookshelf.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we follow that religiously.
Yeah.
It's really good for learning the basics and the principles of animation.
Right.
Yeah. And I think if you want to be an animator and if you don't have these books, you need to buy it right now. And have it in your bookshelf.
Right.
Yeah.
We'll have links in the... Yeah. I'm not going to say doobly-doo, but we'll have links available to these two books.
Yeah.
Anywhere else?
Yeah.
I say this like spoiler. I actually have a list here. I know what Sue's going to answer. I'm just going through this.
Yeah.
Now. What else?
Yeah.
Spontaneously.
Yeah. This is my personal thing that I do, but I know it helped me a lot, is just I really, really just watch a lot of films. But I watched them twice.
Yeah.
So first time to genuinely enjoy the film, like as a normal audience. Yeah?
Yeah.
And after watching the first time, if I feel like I really liked some scenes or some dialogue or any composition in the, of the film, then I watch it twice to purely just analyze. And that can be my first time analyzing, or it can be I can do it 10 more times.
Yeah.
It might be 2, 3, 4 more times, but I watch it many, many times to analyze. And I think it helps a lot. If you really find a scene or a sequence that you liked a lot, just watch it over and over. And also try to draw it on paper. Yeah. Like make your... what was it? The aspect ratio. The 720 HD aspect ratio. Just draw a square. That framing square, and then just draw that composition.
Right.
Yeah, it really helps a lot. And before doing this, we have some links on YouTube. They teach you, one of them is called In-Depth Cine, and the other one's called Studio Binder. They teach you what it takes to make a great cinematic composition in film.
Right.
Which also applies to game animation as well. But just go through all those videos, because they have different videos, and watch those videos and apply or try to look for those examples in the films that you really like,
right,
and try to draw them. And that gives you a good training of making good cinematic compositions in the framing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what I do a lot when I have free time. Yeah.
Are you still able to watch it the first time without analyzing?
No. I try. I'm really trying.
Yeah.
I'm trying not to see things, but I cannot help. But yeah.
I can imagine you sitting there watching.
Yeah.
If nothing else, like a Pixar movie.
Yeah.
Now you're more into the realistic side, but that must still be be hard.
Any movie, cartoon, live action, I analyze them all.
Well,
there are exceptions where the story is really stunning.
Yeah.
If I'm getting really into the story, then I'll forget about it.
Yeah.
Then I'm genuinely like an audience. I'm just watching it. But if it's not, sometimes I'm getting distracted with me analyzing right. things in every shot. Yeah.
But wouldn't that speak high of the animations in that particular movie? If even
for me, it's everything. It's I could be analyzing the animation,
yeah.
the movement, or the staging of the film.
Right.
Yeah, like if this part of the film is trying to create some tension or mystery, then they do it with the camera yeah. in the staging. And I'm like, wow, that's why I'm feeling like nervous in the scene.
Right.
Yeah. So I analyzed that later on for my second viewing of the film. Yeah. Like, what did they do that made yeah. me feel this way? Yeah. That's another good thing. Like, if you felt strongly about a scene, just watch the shots.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, what in the camera made you feel that way? And it really helps. You can apply that while you are working as well as yeah. an animator, as a cinematic animator. Yeah.
And now we know also that you go down and analyze actually down to face twitches and stuff like
I'm
that.
Also,
so you have
yeah.
a huge span of, this cinematic movement. And then like, how's your reaction?
I don't tell these people because it's uncomfortable, but I am analyzing people's face a lot. I'm analyzing you right now.
I'm going to hide behind the microphone.
Yeah.
But thank you so much for coming again. 1.5 years in the making.
Yeah.
And I'm super happy we've done this.
I am very happy. Yeah, that we finally made it.
let's do it again in less than 1.5 years.
Yes.
Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.